Word of mouth.
Word of mouth.
Word of mouth.
This is Word of Mouth from New Hampshire Public Radio. I'm Taylor Quimby, sitting in for Virginia Prescott. Now, I'm a coffee guy, personally, but some mornings nothing beats a tall glass of 100% orange juice. Pure and refreshing as it may be, though, you might be surprised to discover that there's a trade secret behind getting your orange juice to taste especially orange juicy. And while the product may technically be all natural, the process itself is another matter. Clay Wirestone is a contributor to Mental Floss, where he wrote about two semi-secret industry additives, one for orange juice and another for wine. And Clay, welcome to Word of Mouth.
Good to be here, Taylor.
So I've always heard that you should be careful of taking natural for granted when you read it in a food label. Is that the case?
That's certainly part of the situation with orange juice. You know, the thing is, the old frozen orange juice in tubes, believe it or not, is probably one of the most natural kinds of orange juice that you can buy, because they pick the oranges, they, you know, pulp them, or they get the juice out of them. The water's taken out and it's frozen. And that was done for a few decades, and that's actually a fairly simple natural process. But what happened was is that in the 80s or so, the big juice manufacturers realized that they could maybe market something a little bit differently, maybe make something a little more appealing by launching what they called, you know, not from concentrate orange juices.
Right.
And the key point here is that they're called not from concentrate. They are not called fresh. And that's because they're not. You know, oranges are really only harvested 2 or 3 months out of the year.
Right.
So in order to have a consistent kind of supply of not-from-concentrate juice, you have to store it. And what they figured out in terms of storing it was you'd take the juice and you would put it in giant vats. The juice would then be in for about a year. But to keep the juice from going bad or oxidizing, they had to take out all the oxygen.
Okay.
What happens when you take out all the oxygen is that you take out most of the flavor.
That sounds like a problem.
Yes. Or the volatile organic compounds that make things smell and taste good, since so much of taste is smell. So what they figured out, and they kind of got with some of the scent and flavor scientists. You know, there's a lot of them in New Jersey for some reason, but these are also folks that do perfumes and the flavorings that are added in other foods.
So I hope you're not about to tell me that there's perfume in my orange juice.
No, well, it actually is. I mean, it's basically an orange flavored perfume. Yes, I mean, if you think about it, so much of taste. I mean, taste is very simple. Like, taste is sweet, sour, salty, whatever.
Okay.
What we think of as taste is so much of it is actually smell. So what these flavor scientists did was they figured, well, you know, it's going to look weird if orange juice has, you know, added flavorings on the label.
Well, you couldn't call it 100% juice.
Exactly. So what they did was they gave the flavor scientists the assignment, well, here is some orange peel, some orange oils, you know, in other words, all stuff that's actually extracted from oranges, but now do your magic on it. And so, you know, kind of using these as starting points then, the scientists put together what became known as flavor packs. And these these flavor packs are...
So it sounds like Kool-Aid.
Yeah, I mean, more or less. And so then what you do is you'd go into this giant refrigerated vat of orange juice. You'd take out, you know, the juice for the day, and you'd add these flavor packs back in. And it gives you a consistency, too. I mean, that's the other big point here is that, you know, you could theoretically have orange juice without flavor packs, you know, if you didn't deoxygenate it or whatever. But it would all taste different. And people want certain things. You know, people have, you know, a Minute Maid. I like Minute Maid because it tastes like this. I like Tropicana because it tastes like this. And to ensure that consistency, basically, that's one of the reasons that flavor packs, you know, came into being. I mean, the other thing that's important, as I note in my article, you know, the two leading brands of orange juice, Minute Maid, Tropicana, one's owned by Coke, one's owned by Pepsi. So it's not like the owners of these brands have any kind of special all-natural inclination. You know, these are big multinational brands that want to keep things consistent.
Wait, so are there different flavor packs for different brands? Or
yes,
is it one
yes.
thing
no,
that gets
no,
put in
no,
all
no,
orange each, juice?
It's actually not only by different brands. It varies by country as well. People in the United States have a slightly different preference for how their orange juice tastes than people in other countries. Minute Maid has one of the most distinctive flavor packs, apparently. It's a kind of a candy flavor, very sweet.
That's exactly how I love my orange juice.
and actually, I mean, folks that have looked into this say that one of the most interesting things about flavor packs is they don't actually make it taste like orange juice. Like, actual orange juice does not taste like flavor-packed orange juice. It is not as sweet. It is not a but because people have certain flavor preferences in their palates, they over the years they formulated these flavor packs to, you know, to kind of be what people want and what people think of as orange juice. But it's not actually necessarily what it is.
Okay, well, it's kind of weird, but overall not harmful, right? We don't have to worry about this.
Well, no, not necessarily. I mean, I think it's, you know, it's not. And actually, in the orange juice industry, I mean, it's kind of an open secret. I mean, when you have these giant publicly traded companies, these things don't remain, you know, off the radar totally. And it is true. I mean, it is made from oranges, so they're able to say quite accurately it's 100% orange juice. It's more just, if you think about it, we have these kind of industrial food production processes, and you know, people want to know what's behind that.
Okay, well, then let's move to wine, because you also wrote about wine. Mm-hmm. And winemakers are using something that I guess might be considered similar to flavor packs, except it sounds even more like Kool-Aid. We're talking about a product called Mega Purple.
Mega Purple, Mega Red.
Ultra Red.
Ultra
Mega Purple,
Red, yeah.
Ultra Red.
Yes. Well, so the thing about wine is it's actually much more secret, or it's much more under the radar, because, you know, wine is generally created by much smaller companies. You know, a little more family kind of oriented business. They don't have to be quite as public about what goes on.
And we like to think of it as coming from a certain region and being very, you know, there's a local quality
right.
to wine.
Yes, except for the fact that we also like things to be cheap. I mean, obviously, some people do want to go out and buy the $50 bottle or whatever, but that's a relatively rare occurrence. So if you think about it, though, you know, wine faces a similar problem, which is, you know, certainly in the United States. More and more people like wine. There's the notion that it's good for your health if you're drinking your glass of red wine a day. So you have to make a lot of wine. And again, wine is very variable based on the year. And people have certain things they want to see in wine, particularly your red wines. They want to see it be dark. They want to have it have a real, you know, kind of a fruity aroma and taste. And so that's what Mega Purple, Ultra Red provide. These are essentially super concentrated. It's a super concentrated grape juice.
Mm-hmm.
It sells for around $130 a gallon. And they basically put just, you can literally just put a few drops or so. It's you know, it's less than 1% of a bottle of wine. It's sometimes like 0.4 or something like that.
But it must have a pretty powerful effect.
Well, exactly. It's ultra concentrated. And according to some estimates, it's in basically every bottle of wine that's sold under $20. But at the same time, there's a little bit of dispute in the wine world about it. Because, again, you know, you're talking about something that, you know, what's wine made of? It's made of grapes. What's Mega Purple or Ultra Red? It's grapes. It's, you know, it's concentrated grapes. And this is actually not a new problem for wine producers. You know, going back hundreds and hundreds of years, there would always be an issue that you would get an off year. You'd get a bad crop or, you
sure.
know, the wine would look a little weird. It maybe taste a little funny. And so, you know, in older days, what they would often do is you'd actually just blend another complementary kind of wine in it. Again, I think it's our perception of what a product is, which especially is wine, which I like to think people I think like to think that, you know, it's just kind of squished with your feet and it's put in a bottle and it's put away in a vault. And, you know, 2 or 3 years later, there it is.
So this was news to me when I first read your article. Is this on a label anywhere? Are consumers going to actually read about this when they're buying a product if they wanted to?
No, and that's because, you know, kind of as we've mentioned, with a flavor pack from orange juice, because those starting ingredients are from an orange, even if they're manipulated in a lab, it's still 100%, you know, orange sourced. And it's true. I mean, that's where it starts from. Similarly, when you're talking about Mega Purple and the Ultra Reds, you know, again, even though these are hyper concentrated in, you know, it's kind of a product of some lab trickery or whatnot, because they're starting from a grape, it's still wine. It's not something that's required to be labeled, you know, as a separate ingredient.
So after discovering this, your thoughts, should we avoid these additives or accept them as maybe a necessary part of wanting our beverages to taste more or less the same all the time?
I mean, I think in a way it's a triumph of – there's a weird kind of triumph of modern food production there. You know, there's a giant demand for these products. There's a giant demand for them to taste good and consistent. And this is actually food producers reacting to market forces. And certainly, you know, if you're talking about orange juice, you can always buy some oranges and, you know, and squeeze them yourself at home. It is not difficult to make a natural orange juice. And it's certainly not difficult to go out and spend a lot more on a bottle of wine if you want. And you'll probably at that point have something that's, you know, if you're buying something that's, you know, $30, $40, $50, it's probably going to have a little less monkeying around with it.
Well, Clay, thanks for adding a flavor pack to our show today. We really appreciate it.
Thank you.
Clay Wirestone is a contributor to Mental Floss. You can find a link to his article on flavor packs and Mega Purple. And no, we're not talking about Kool-Aid. You can find that link at wordofmouthradio.org.
From Florida, a powerhouse of vitamin C, Florida Orange Juice gives Barbara Ann Scott, Olympic skating champion, a real powerhouse of vitamin C and energy.
Yes, that's true. I know I need vitamin C every day because I've been told the body just cannot store it. And I like to get my vitamin C the way nature intended.
Aside from the flavor, one thing that greatly influences our food purchasing habits is, of course, packaging. William Hammack brings us this story of a man who had a special gift for packaging, Gail Borden.
In this gift-buying season, you can study a sub-discipline of engineering that fascinates me, packaging. A good package blends technical know-how and psychology. The engineer must understand the chemistry between, say, orange juice and its coated cardboard package, but must also grasp the emotional chemistry between the package and the consumer. In Japan, for example, fish cakes come wrapped in paper that looks like traditional handmade leaves, yet it sports a barcode. The granddaddy of all packagers is Gail Borden. He became interested in packaging food to make it portable after hearing in 1846 of the Donner Party. While traveling west, they became trapped by snow. Only 47% of the original 87 survived, and they did so by eating the others. This gruesome tragedy stirred Borden to action. He first tried to condense the essence of meat into a biscuit. It took 6 years and $60,000 to develop, but failed because it was unsightly and unpalatable. But the idea of condensing fascinated Borden. He advised his pastor to condense your sermons. He told lovers to no longer write poetry, but to condense all they have to say into a kiss. And he suggested you spend as little time as possible at a meal. Borden's next attempt at food packaging came while on an ocean voyage to London. The ship's seasick cows couldn't be milked, so the ship filled with the cries of hungry infants, which spurred him to invent condensed milk. Although experts told him it wouldn't work, Borden put some in a vacuum pan and boiled it. It failed, just as the experts predicted, because it stuck to the pan. Being less knowledgeable than the experts, Borden simply greased the pan and it worked fine to make condensed milk. He canned the product, selling it with the promise of all good packaging, a sanitary and safe product.
And we move from the packaging of food to the content of children's lunchboxes. Up next on Word of Mouth, are brown bag lunches really healthier than cafeteria fare? We'll find out after the news.